You know, I was catching a little bit of football before I came here. Hang on a sec, I gotta fix this. All right, let me back up. Good evening. I was catching a little football before I came here, and I love this time of year. I love football. I love to watch football. It's a lot of fun. I love to cheer it on. And I heard a story recently that I think relates to football some degree. Albert Einstein was at a large party, I was told, some years ago, and he was at this party, you know, brushing with the folk and meeting them and getting to know them a little bit. And he went up to this man and he said, excuse me, what's your IQ? The man said, 202. He said, that is great. He said, we can discuss the laws of physics. He said, we can plan for future events. We can do wonderful things. We will have many great discussions. He goes to this lady and he says to her, what's your IQ? She said, 173. He said, that is great. We can discuss politics. We can have magnificent conversations, you and me. He goes to this man. He says, what's your IQ? He said, 55. He said, how about them Cowboys? All right, you can think about that for a minute. But I love football. And I was at home watching some football before I came. And the Raiders were losing. That's typical for my team. They're losing 7-0 very early in the first quarter. But I was cheering for them anyways. You know, and when you watch football, a lot of times you hear the commentator and he'll make a statement. Oh, well, they're playing at home this week and they have their 12th man. You know, referring to the crowd, referring to the stadium packed with individuals. You know, he said, they have their 12th man this weekend, so that's, they're going to get some benefit from that, you know. And playing at home is an advantage. And those people, they sit in the stands and they cheer for their team. And so football is a great sport, and I love to watch that and that enthusiasm in the crowd, and it's contagious. Before I talk about that anymore, and you may not even realize I'm trying to set you up for where I'm going tonight, I want to talk about endurance. And what is endurance? Well, endurance is the ability to keep going. Endurance is the ability to, when you face something that's difficult, it doesn't stop you. You know, my sister ran a marathon. I have no idea how we, her and I came from the same genes, because I can't run anything. She ran 26.2 miles, I think it's 26.2. That amazes me. That's a long ways to run. And it takes endurance to run a marathon. There's a marathon that occurs, it's called an ultra marathon. And a friend of mine back home in California, he used to be one of the sponsors of this marathon. His company used to sponsor it, and he used to get to ride in one of the vans that would be assigned to ride along an individual to make sure they were okay. And I want to tell you a little bit about this marathon. It's called Kiehl's Badwater Ultra Marathon. Any of you heard of that marathon? Good. That's what I like to hear. I want to educate you on this marathon. It is overseen by a group called Adventure Corps. And this Adventure Corps, they specialize in ultra-endurance sports. And this is what it says. This is a description of this race. A true challenge of the champions, this legendary foot race pits approximately 90 of the world's toughest athletes, runners, triathletes, adventure racers, and mountaineers against one another and the elements. Now listen to this. Covering 135 miles nonstop from Death Valley to Mount Whitney, California, in temperatures up to 130 degrees Fahrenheit. It is the most demanding and extreme running race offered anywhere on the planet. Think about this for a second. 135 miles. I will never in my life accumulate that many miles on foot. 135 miles. In addition to this, it's run in temperatures that in the daytime can exceed 120, and they said gets up to 130 degrees. And if you know anything about the desert, the nights get cold. You may think, well, that's what a great relief. It's actually not. So you have 130 degrees. You're running 135 miles. Let me read a little bit more about this race. The start line is at Badwater Death Valley, which marks the lowest elevation in the Western Hemisphere at 280 feet below sea level. The race finishes at the Mount Whitney portals at 8,360 feet. The Badwater course covers three mountain ranges for a total of 13,000 of a cumulative vertical ascent and 4,700 feet of cumulative descent. They run this. It's not in a car. They run this nonstop. 130 degrees. This blows me away. But you know, in a race like this, endurance is actually so important that they won't even let you in the race. You have to actually be accepted. You have to actually put an application in that says, let me run in your race. They will look at your qualifications and they will say yes or no. Let me read you some of the qualifications. You have officially finished at least 3 100-kilometer or longer running races and or multi-sport events that include running sections of at least 50 continuous miles. That's one way you can get in. Or you have officially finished at least 100 miles or longer running race and or multi-sport event that included a running section of at least 100 continuous miles. And they give you a couple of other ways you can qualify. So you tell them how you qualified for this race. You send in your application. They look at your qualifications. And then they say, okay, this person can run in our race. You see, the people who oversee this race realize that if you're not qualified to run in this race, you can die. That's how serious this is. So they don't take allowing somebody into this race lightly. They take it very seriously. And they realize that endurance for these people is not just crucial. Their life can depend on it. So what is endurance? The ability to keep going. The ability to nonstop. Remember those Duracell commercials that everybody hates? That rabbit, I hate those commercials. Drives me nuts. Anyways, we see the endurance is the ability to keep going, to not stop. Now, how do we gain endurance? Oh, I think we all know this answer. You know, you gain endurance by working towards that goal. If I want to run a marathon, I begin slowly. Maybe I do a mile, then 2 miles, then 3 miles, and I eventually get up to where I'm near that number I'm shooting for. That's how I gain endurance. But the problem is for me, is I hate running. I'm not going to run on my own. There was a short time there where my wife and Susan Wallace and Kim Wallace were getting together and they were going running. And I'm thinking, okay, I can run with somebody. So I would start tagging along with them. But as soon as those ladies quit running, I quit running. There was a time there where I was living kind of close to where Don Rule was living. And I used to go running with Don. But when I moved and Don moved, I quit running. I don't have enough desire to run on my own. Now, I do go lift weights, and I do this 4 days a week, and I usually go by myself, and I'm okay. I'm motivated to go by myself to that. But on Mondays, I go with a group of 4 other guys. And the reason I do that on Mondays is because I'm exercising a muscle group that I particularly don't enjoy. I'm not good at it. And having those 4 guys there cheering me on, rooting me on, helps me to accomplish a goal that I don't think I would have accomplished on my own. Now, earlier I talked about the 12th man in football. I'm talking about these guys in the gym who cheer me on. And here's what I want to go with tonight. Here's the question I want to ask. And if you read the bulletin, my title was this. Who cheers for you? Who cheers for you? And I want to read from Hebrews. If you have your Bibles, please turn to Hebrews. And Don was reading from there this morning. And we're going to look at some of the same passages Don did. Hebrews chapter 12. I want to read verse 1, and we're going to go back and read portions of verse chapter 11 in just a minute. But let's begin in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore. Now, he starts off by saying therefore, and most of you might be familiar with this passage. But he's saying therefore. In light of what we just talked about in chapter 11, those great heroes of faith, which we're going to read about in a minute. He says, therefore, since these men are there, these women are there. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. He says, the Hebrew writer and the Apostle Paul both talk about the Christian walk in terms of races. You know, I think sports was a big deal back in those days, and it was reflected in their writing. And he says here, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Neil Lightfoot made this comment on this passage. What the author now begins to stress as he looks back over the past and views the need of his readers is that that same sort of faith amidst adversity produces endurance. Faith amidst adversity produces endurance. Adversity. When hardships come, we want to quit, don't we? When we have hardships, okay, when we're training for something and I have an injury, I want to quit. If I'm working towards a goal and I have a setback, I want to quit. But when we stick out those injuries, when we overcome those hardships, let's paint this picture. Let's say you're training for that marathon. And you pull a hamstring. You tear a hamstring. It just seems like a good thing. You tear a hamstring. And you overcome that setback. you keep training, you rehabilitate, you keep training, you come back and you compete in that race. When the pain starts setting in and everybody else is wanting to quit, I think that pain that you've overcome, that adversity that you've overcome motivates you. You say to yourself, I'm not going to stop. I had to overcome this injury. I know what pain is. I'm not going to stop. So adversity then helps us to become stronger. Overcoming adversity helps us to better run the race. So the Hebrew writer says here, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witness, let us lay aside every weight. What are some weights? Adversities can be weights. He says, and sin, which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. So let's go ahead and turn back to chapter 11. And I want to read from chapter 11. We're going to look at some stories that you guys are all familiar with. Let's begin in verse 7 of chapter 11. It says, by faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear constructed an ark for the saving of his household. By this, he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. We all know the story of Noah, right? We all know what he was about. We know that he was a righteous man in a world of evil. And in fact, in Genesis, in chapter 6, verses 5 through 8, it, in God describing the people, says that every thought they had was evil continually. I mean, every thought was evil continually. This is what God described these people as. Noah was in these people. Do you think that Noah stands by and watches us living in this world with its many evil things that we have to face? Do you think that Noah stands there and he understands what we've gone through? Do you think that he cheers us on? I think Noah's there. The Hebrew writer says he's in that cloud of witnesses. He's watching us run that race. When Noah cheers us on, when you're going through hardships because it's hard to live in this world, when you talk about the news and everything is negative on the news, and we get discouraged because we live in a world that seems so evil, no one knows what it's like to live in evil times. And he can cheer us on. He can say, don't be discouraged. You're not alone. Keep up the faith. You think you have bad neighbors? Try having Noah's neighbors. Noah knows what it's like. Noah's in our cloud of witnesses. Guys, Noah wants us to keep going. He is in that cloud of witnesses. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 12. Hold your finger in Hebrews. I want to begin in verse 1. We're going to read Genesis 12, 1 through 4. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Look at this next line. So Abram went as the Lord had told him. And we're going to read about Abraham in the book of Hebrews in just a minute. But this is something you guys all remember, right? And the Hebrew writer is going to talk about this. Abraham was called by God to go to a place he had never been. Guys, when God asks us to go places that we've never been, to go in situations that we've never been in, maybe they scare us, maybe we're frightened to go in those situations, Abraham is in our cloud of witnesses. And Abraham says, guys, you go anyways. Why do we go anyways? Because we know who's in control. And Abraham cheers us on. Turn to Genesis chapter 22. And I want to read verses 1 through 3. And then we're going to skip down and read 9 through 10 as well. Genesis chapter 22, verses 1 through 3. And after these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here am I. And he said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning. Look over at verse 9 and 10. When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. How many of you guys think that you're asked to sacrifice for God? How many of us have been offered a job and we say, this job is going to pay me $15,000 a year more, but the problem is I'm going to be missing a lot more on Sundays. Or I'm not going to be able to teach Bible class anymore. And then, you know, maybe your conscience gets pricked and it's as if God is telling you, you need to sacrifice. But then we quickly dismiss it and we say, but God, it's $15,000 a year more. Abraham is in that cloud of witnesses. And Abraham is telling you, guys, this is what it means to sacrifice. When it comes time to sacrifice, Abraham is there because he knows what it's like to sacrifice. Go ahead and turn back to Hebrews. And we are going to go back and forth between Hebrews and Genesis, just so you know. So if you want to hold your fingers there, feel free to do that. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, verse 8, it says, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise, for he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. Abraham cheers us on when God calls us to go places that we don't want to go. I know there's missionaries who go to all over parts of the world, scary parts of the world. I know it has to be tough decisions for them. But here's the point. Abraham cheers them on. He's in their cloud of witnesses. He understands what it's like to go places you don't want to go. He understands what it's like to sacrifice. Sometimes I think we forget what it's like to sacrifice. Look at what he says, the Hebrew writer says in verse 17 through 19. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Guys, Abraham is in our cloud of witnesses. Go back to Genesis chapter 45. How many times have you been wronged by somebody? How many times have somebody upset you, they've offended you, they've hurt you, and you forgive them? And then they hurt you again, and you forgive them. And then pretty soon, that area where you want to forgive them, that space in your heart where it's soft, that place starts to get calloused, and you no longer want to forgive them. And you justify it by saying, well, I've already forgiven them 5 times. I've already forgiven them 6 times. I've already forgiven them 491 times. And so you justify it by saying, I've forgiven them all I have to. When we're in that situation, Joseph reminds us what he went through. Look at what it says in Genesis chapter 45. Let's begin in verse 1. Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, make everyone go out from me. So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud so that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. And Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. So Joseph said to his brothers, come near to me, please. And they came near, and he said, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. Joseph knew what it was like to forgive somebody. When we're struggling with forgiveness, Joseph reminds us that if anybody had a reason to not forgive, he did. Thrown into a pit, only the plan was to go back and kill him later, right? Only because of his nice brother, Reuben, intervened, was his life spared. Then he was sold into slavery, lives in slavery for a while in Potiphar's house. Then when he tries to do what's right by refusing Potiphar's wife, he's thrown in prison. Then in prison, of course, being a godly man, he starts becoming respected. And he intervenes in the life of these two men, and one of them is blessed, and he says, remember me when you go out from here. But the man forgets him. So for many years, Joseph was in prison, in servitude, forced, threatened by his own brothers to be killed. All because his brothers hated him. But when it came time for forgiveness, he was willing to do it. Guys, Joseph is in our cloud of witnesses. He reminds us that if you want to run the race with endurance, forgiveness is a part of that race. And he reminds us of that. You're already in Genesis. Go to Exodus. And I think I'm in chapter 3. So hang on one second. Yeah, chapter 3. And let's begin in verse 10. And God here is, of course, talking to Moses. We have the burning bush going on. And this is God speaking initially in verse 10. He says, "Come, I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?" Okay, so we know the story, right? God comes to Moses. He says, "Moses, I need you to go to Egypt. You have to bring my people out." And what does Moses do? He balks at the idea. He doesn't want to go. He makes excuses. "God, I'm nobody." And this whole conversation goes on and on. And it's almost humorous because every time God tells him, "I'm going to be there, you can do it," Moses comes up with another excuse. Verse 13. Then Moses said to God, "If I come to the people of Israel and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am." And he said, "Say this to the people of Israel, 'I am has sent me to you.'" So God, again, answers his question. "Tell them I've sent you." Skip down to chapter 4. And notice in verse 1. And they're still talking about the same thing here. "Then Moses answered, 'But behold, they will not believe me or listen to my voice, for they will say, The Lord did not appear to you.' The Lord said to him, 'What is that in your hand?' He said, 'A staff.' And he said, 'Throw it on the ground.' So he threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent, and Moses ran from it." So God is trying to instill in Moses, "Yes, I'm going to be with you. They're going to believe you. I'm going to show signs through you, Moses." But Moses still isn't convinced. Look at what it says in verse 10. "But Moses said to the Lord, 'Oh, my Lord, I'm not eloquent, either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and of tongue.'" Every time God comes up and says, "Moses, go do this," Moses offers an excuse. Do you think Moses knows what it's like to be challenged to do something that's out of your comfort zone? I don't think Moses was in his comfort zone going to Egypt. How many of us step out of our comfort zone regularly? Guys, we need to step out of our comfort zone. God calls us to step out of our comfort zone. When you're facing that tough thing of stepping out of what you're comfortable doing, Moses is there. Moses is saying, "Hey, I used to be like you. I didn't want to step out of my comfort zone either." Guys, Moses is in our cloud of witnesses. He cheers us on. He encourages us to step out in faith. And we all know the story of Moses and the leader he became. A great leader. One of the great leaders Israel ever had. In Hebrews chapter 11, go ahead and turn back there. I'll give you a second. Hebrews chapter 11, we're going to look at verse 24 through 26. "By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasure of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward." Moses knows what it's like to give up great riches. When we give up something or we're struggling with the idea of giving up something for God, Moses knows what it's like to give up great riches. It says again here that he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Man, that was wealth. That was power. That was riches. He wanted no part of it. Why? Because he chose to be mistreated with the people of God. When you choose to be mistreated with people of God, and you're struggling, maybe you're struggling with that. Maybe it's hard for you to cut off, you know, to say, "I'm not worried about wealth. I'm not worried about finances." That's a tough one to say, "I'm not worried about." You know, maybe we sometimes get too wrapped up in that. When we do, when we feel ourselves being pulled in that direction, Moses is there reminding us it's not as important as the people of God. He's there cheering us on to make the right decision. He's there cheering us on, encouraging us to run this race with the other people of God. And we can go on and on in the book of Hebrews. And one of the stories that I love so much, and I am going to touch on it, I was going to go over it, but I'm not going to. The story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These three men, they were asked by somebody of authority to deny God. How many of us have been asked by somebody of authority to do something wrong? You know, maybe to cheat on the taxes. I had an uncle who used to work for a company in California. He was their accountant for over 20 years. He lost his job because when a new boss came in, he told him that he didn't want him to report some of the money they made. My uncle refused to do this. And because of this, lost a job that he had held up for over 20 years. A person of authority threatened him, and I'm proud of him for doing this. He stood up for what was right, even when authority told him to do something else. How many of us struggle with that? Maybe we have something like that in our life right now. If we do, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and a host of others stand there cheering us on, saying, don't give in. Stand up for what's right. I want to read to you from Daniel chapter 3. You don't have to turn there. But in Daniel chapter 3, verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered King Nebuchadnezzar this way. O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. They cheer us on. These three men who are willing to give their life for righteousness, these three men stand behind you in your Christian walk of faith. They stand there with Moses, with Noah, with Abel, with Adam, with Seth, with Enoch. The list goes on and on. They stand there, guys, in your side, cheering you on. They're your 12th man. That's where I was going earlier. They're your 12th man. They should give you strength. We can look at their examples in the Old Testament. We can read about them. We can be reminded of what they endured, and that they are our cloud of witnesses. They should give us strength. They should add to our endurance. But you know, beyond them, beyond these tremendous men and women of faith, there's others who stand behind you, cheering you on. My guess is, if one person came forward tonight and said, I'm struggling with sin, and I need the prayers of this congregation, my guess is that most, if not all of the people in this room, would pray for that person. That's my guess. And you know why? Because we in here cheer each other on. We in here stand behind each other. We encourage each other. We cheer for each other to succeed, to overcome those sins in our lives. And we go beyond this Christian family here. You have your physical family who cheers for you. You have friends who cheer for you. Tonight's lesson is supposed to be an encouraging lesson, because I want everybody to see just how many people, just how many spiritual beings are cheering us on. We can talk about the men and women of faith. We can talk about Christian brothers and sisters. We can talk about your parents, your children, your aunts, your uncles, your brothers, your sisters. But there's something even greater than all of this combined that cheers us on. If you have your Bibles, turn to Genesis chapter 4. I know I said we weren't going to go there, but we're going to. Genesis chapter 4. And I want to read verse 6 and 7. This is a thought that I shared with young people recently at a devotional. And this passage, I think, is so powerful. And it's really, I think it's an awesome passage. Now, before we read this passage, know this. Cain has not yet killed Abel. He's not yet sinned the sin that we know he's going to commit. But God knows what's in Cain's heart. So he goes to Cain before Cain commits the sin, and he gives Cain these words of encouragement. He says to him, look at this, in verse 6, the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry, and why has your face fallen? See, God's aware of Cain's condition. And he says to him in verse 7, if you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you. But look at this last part. But you must rule over it. Guys, God was on Cain's side. God is on our side. God stands behind us in that race. He cheers us on. He encourages us. He wants what's best for us. Remember when Christ was alive, how many times did he offer prayers? How many times were his prayers about people? I don't know. But I bet Christ's prayers were literally filled with people's requests for people. God himself is in your crowd. God himself cheers for you. I want to read one more passage while you're in the Old Testament. Go to Isaiah chapter 43. I want to begin in verse 1. Isaiah 43, beginning in verse 1. And God here is speaking. And it says, but now thus says the Lord, he who created you, O Jacob, he who formed you, O Israel, Now here's God speaking. Fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. When you pass through the waters, and notice as we read this, the Old Testament references to God being there for the nation of Israel. When you pass through waters, I will be with you. And through rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. So we see here a reference to me, the crossing of the Red Sea. We see Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, I think. We see these things. And he says, I'm going to be with you. You're not going to be burned. You're not going to be hurt. Look at verse 3. Why are we going to be hurt? How do we know these things are going to be true? Notice verse 3. For I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior. I give Egypt as your ransom, Cush and Seba in exchange for you. God says, I love you so much. I am your Savior. I am your God. He says, I would give Egypt and Cush. I would give these in exchange for you. Guys, God is on your side. God cheers for you. Notice the next verse, and this is my favorite verse out of this passage. Why is he going to do all these things? He says, because you are precious in my eyes and honored. And look at that next line. And I love you. Isn't that awesome? He says, because you are precious in my eyes and honored, and I love you. Guys, God is on your side. I want to read to you Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, one more time. You can read it along with me if you want. But I want to read it to you, and I want you to think about this passage. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Guys, we are called as Christians to run the race. We're called to run it with endurance. We're called to run it with strength. We're called to cast off the weight that's weighing us down. We're told to cast off the sin. And the Hebrew writer reminds us, you can do this because you have a host of people cheering for you, among other reasons. But you have people cheering for you. You have beings in heaven cheering for you. What does the Bible tell us? What do we read about when he says a sinner rejoices? The angels in heaven, when a sinner repents, the angels in heaven rejoice. Guys, God is on your side. We are on your side. The men and women of faith in the Bible are on your side. I want to offer the invitation to you tonight. If you are struggling with sin, if you are struggling with your Christian walk, if you have burdens that seem too heavy for you to bear, first of all, I want to remind you of the things we've read and who's cheering for you. But I also want to remind you of this. We're here for you. We want to help you. We want to encourage you. We want to strengthen you. And if we can do that tonight, please come at this time as we sing a song that's been selected.